You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. Making sense of it all. Trying. Operative term. As Yoda would say, no try do. But if he were dealing with the current climate of political and social challenges, he may be okay with trying. Just a guess. I don't know. Wow. So we'll talk a little bit about this protest of Betsy DeVos as she was trying to enter her place of employment and why we're really at a bizarre point now. I think it's almost back to the 60s, which reminds me, I'll talk about this a little bit later on. I've got a vision for an updated Back to the Future, which has to happen. It has got to happen. There's got to be a Back to the 80s. We'll talk about that. Maybe it's already happened and I'm just clueless, but that's the next remake. It's so perfectly set up. But we'll talk about also the travel ban, what this means. Should it go to the Supreme Court? Could it go to the Supreme Court? It's definitely judicially challenged all over the place, and that could be the next step. We'll see where that goes, which is not unprecedented for a presidential order to go to the Supreme Court. Happened to President Obama. We'll talk about that. And also temptation and negotiating with Satan, according to Pope Francis, all of that and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour, culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So I was talking about this a moment ago. If you remember in Back to the Future, the first installment movie, when Marty, right, Marty, is back in the 50s, and they're like, and he's trying to say that he's from the future and whatever, he's all confused, right? And they're like, oh, yeah, well, who's the president? And he says, Ronald Reagan. And they're like, ha, 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 the actor, right? So that would be back to the 80s when we say, who's the president? And they say Donald Trump. You're like, ah, ha, ha, that guy that was in Playboy magazine or whatever, right? Well, you name it. Ha, 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 that guy who's a billionaire who just declared bankruptcy for the fourth time, whatever, right? So, you know. Yeah, there's my brilliant screenwriting. But it has to happen. There's so many things that are perfect to go back to the 80s now, just like in the 80s, it was perfect to go back to the 50s. We're ripe. We're ready. We're ready for the Back to the Future remake if it hasn't happened yet. And like I say, it could have. I'm just that clueless. I am excited about Lego Batman because Batman in the Lego movie was far and above my favorite character of them all. So hopefully going to get out to see that because I managed to get free movie passes because I've given enough blood as a platelet donor. I do that frequently, and they reward me with more t-shirts than I can shove in a drawer and occasional movie passes. So I've racked up a batch of movie passes enough to take the whole family out to see Lego Batman this weekend. So hopefully we'll do that. That's exciting. So we're at a point now where we've ratcheted up this antagonism to the point that people can't even get in their workplace. And I think that that's a little bit extreme. Okay, Betsy DeVos is confirmed, right? I mean, unless Trump is impeached and unless everything goes in some crazy reverse order, which I don't see happening, I think that we could have a legal challenge to some of his executive orders, but I don't see an impeachment coming along. This is what we got. Right. So now the question is, where are we most productive? So we got to do. And I think we still got to ask questions. And I get accused of being the Trump basher all the time. Literally, I am asking questions. When I put something out there, I am only asking questions. I'm not there to say, generally, and I'm not going to claim that this is exclusively the case because I know better. Generally, I'm not there to cast judgment. I'm only there to ask questions. There are times where I will cast judgment. I will give you that. I have done that. And yes, that's been something that you could potentially see from me. I get it. But generally, what I'm doing is going, hey, does this make sense? Let's look at this. Let's explore this. Not Trump needs to be impeached, right? Or resist, or any of the things that are out there, which I, if that's where you are, so be it. But I'm saying there comes a time, there has to come a time where we accept what is. There's a great book, and I'm trying now that I mention it, I remember the name of the book, Loving What Is, but I'm drawing a blank on the author's name, and she's got a very interesting name because she is a woman who has a man's name, man-sounding name. Loving What Is, and I'm pretty sharp on authors and titles, but Loving What Is. This is a beautiful examination of contemplative prayer. She doesn't present it like that, but this is, if you truly understand contemplation, contemplation isn't necessarily reflection, even reflection as is the case with, generally speaking, a rosary prayer. Right? You're going to pray a rosary, you're going to reflect. You're going to reflect on those mysteries, you're going to reflect on the things that happen. And there is a mystical component to that, no doubt. But as I'm learning contemplation, as I'm working more at this, both being active and contemplative, what I've understood is what I posted on Facebook today. I was so captivated by the sky. The clouds this morning were just amazing. And the sky could have been crystal blue, clear, and just as blue as you ever want to see. And it would not have been as fascinating as what I saw this morning in the sky. And it just captivated me, literally to the point that I wanted to spend more time with the sky, right? I really wanted to spend more time just at one, meaning in the moment, doing nothing but appreciating this beauty that was the cloud formation that I saw this morning. That is contemplative prayer. Because what you're doing is saying, thank you, God, for this moment. Thank you, God, for this beauty. And I'm just going to experience it. I am just going to experience this for what it is. Now, you think about the deeper mystical level of this. Now, that's the surface. But think about how much more depth there is when you consider being the bride of Christ and receptive of the gifts. Now, it is a sexual analogy in the sense that there's an allegory of man and woman to bride of Christ and Christ. But even more expansive than that, it's a simple appreciation of every ounce of giftedness that God has created. So it's not about rules. It's not about regulations. It's not about do's and don'ts. It's not about thou shalt nots. It's about, my goodness, look at that. Look at the way that tree moves in the wind. There's a beautiful dance to that tree. And the way God has designed that tree to move in the wind. And if I appreciate that, for what it is right now, I don't have to reflect on that tree moving in the wind. I don't have to anticipate that tree moving in the wind. It's moving in the wind. And I say that as I'm looking out my studio window at a tree. I'm looking at it right now. I see it. It's happening. It's now. So the one thing that we can do, the best thing we can, all of us, I don't care where you are politically or philosophically, ideologically, I don't care. The best thing you can do for your sanity, I promise you, because I know this road, the best thing you can do for your sanity is understand contemplation. contemplative connection to what is now in front of you. And with that, you don't have to have a TV screen or a phone screen or a computer screen or any other screen or anything coming at you. You don't have to have that. That's your choice. Turn it off. Now, open your eyes. Get that stuff out of the way. Now, open your eyes. What's in front of you? Is it your family? Is it nature? Is it something even that's perhaps man-made that still is a beautiful creation that, as is all creation inspired by God? What is it? How do we do that? How do we appreciate what is now? And back to this book, Loving What Is, the whole concept is we just create so much anxiety for ourselves. And we blame everyone, and we think everything is everyone else's problem. As opposed to going, you know what? I'm just going to love what is. May not be perfect, but you know what? It never will be. But I can love what is, and I can love it the way it is, and I can love the fact that I have to go in and shut the drawers of my 9-year-old's chest of drawers repeatedly throughout the day. He has no concept of how to shut a drawer. I can say it, as I have a bazillion times, why can't you shut your drawer? And I've got to go back in and shut it. But I can love doing that because I love him. I can love that. No matter how many times I tell my 4-year-old not to leave wrappers around the house of gummies, of his little fruit snacks, they're always there. They're always going to be there somewhere, a corner torn or the whole packet empty, under the couch, in the corner, maybe blatantly just out in the middle of everywhere. And you know what? I can love what is. And I can love that. I can choose to love that. I can look at things that I don't necessarily agree with politically, and I can say, this is really a shame. I wish things were different. I wish I had a way to influence this. And then say, you know what? There are those who do have that position of influence, and they are. So I can love what is. We don't always have to be combative. And in this video that I posted with Betsy DeVos, it's not a huge group of protesters. It's just a few who are just vehemently opposed to her. It's harassment, and it's unfortunate to see that, and we don't need to do that. Yeah, I got news. It made news. Washington Post picked it up, and that's where I found the story. But it's not productive. There is nothing productive. Attacking someone because of who they are or because of what you think they're going to do or what they've done in the past, that is unproductive. It literally produces nothing but anxiety, consternation, and more challenge. Now, what if you use that energy you have and focused it on appreciation of what's in front of you? The clouds in the sky, the wind in the trees. I'm getting kind of Ralph Waldo Emerson on us here. I get that. But come on, right? Blades of grass. More to come. We'll be back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown. I think that's Walt Whitman now that I say that. But they're both in the same. Back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith. Always good to get waxing poetic and then refer to the wrong poet. I'm good like that. I'm not a poetry connoisseur by any stretch of the imagination. I appreciate it for what it is, undoubtedly. And of course, have about what everybody else has when it comes to having had to read this stuff in through school. And I'm always much more of a prose fan. I get poetry and appreciate it, like I say, but obviously can't tell the difference between Emerson and Whitman or Frost even, because I think I may have had him in my head there along the way as well. So anyway, contemplation is what I was talking about. Poets undoubtedly do that. They are able to contemplate on what is now, and by doing that, they produce these great works, as do great musicians, lyricists. There's something beautiful about that, and poetry undoubtedly part of the beauty of that creative reflection that can come from contemplation. So there you have it. So as I posted on Facebook, lies, damn lies, and travel bans, talking about what this all means when it comes to what could essentially prove to be a Supreme Court decision on this. Is there a constitutionality? And then where could that go from there when it comes to, is this a Muslim ban? Is it what we might think it is? There was apparently a Fordham University study, if I'm not mistaken, that did take a close look at refugeeism and terrorist activity. It discovered, there was a discovery that there was a connection, not a correlation, right? There's no correlation other than there's a percentage of those in the refugee community, as there are a percentage of those in the immigrant community, as there are a percentage of those in the American born and raised community that unfortunately will do things that are perhaps unsavory. So the stats, however, showed that of those that were in this study proven to be connected to terrorist activity, the connection was trying to get people back to the home country to do whatever they were going to do there. Now, you can argue, well, they're going to go there and come back here. Well, they're already here, so why do they need to go there? The ones who go there are the ones who are here, like Americans, suburban kids, high school football playing, apple pie and baseball type of kids who end up getting radicalized on the internet and they go to Syria. That has happened. That has happened. And while the stats are there that show that there's some degree of activity, very, very, very small. Now you could say, well, maybe the president knows things that nobody else knows, and there's something to putting these things in place, but obviously judges aren't seeing it that way. And the interesting thing is, now that we're at a federal court level, right, on these district courts, we have a precedent that's set that could stay unless the Supreme Court hears the case. Now, if the Supreme Court chooses not to, then the lower court decision stays. And that would be the reason why the Supreme Court chooses not to, is because the vote is such that those on the court have decided that they like the decision of the lower court, therefore no reason to challenge it. That's the power that the Supreme Court has. And now with a 4-4 split, without the confirmation of the judicial pick of the president, who knows? Who knows what it could do? But if we're at this point of saying that it's speculative at best, but some sort of campaign promise, and I tell you what, say what you will about Donald Trump, the one thing he certainly seems to be doing is delivering on every promise, right? I don't care if it was an offhanded comment and a campaign stop in Nebraska. He's delivering on it with executive orders to kick him out there get the stuff out the door that he said he was going to do, he's doing it. No question about him being a doer. That's obvious. Constitutionality, questionable. And that's why the courts are there to say, wait a minute. But in all of this, what I find interesting is the accusation of the president for, some sort of bias on the court. And what he has said is that he doesn't want to see this politicization of the judiciary. And my question is, when have we not had a politicization of the judiciary? When has that not been the case? Why do we fight so hard as we did in this political climate leading into this election, saying it's all about the court? We've got to have the right justices in place. Conservatives want conservatives. Liberals want liberals. Do not tell me that the court has not been politicized. I don't know what the court looked like when it was first established by George Washington, when he picked the first 9 justices to sit on that court. I don't know. But I know this. Pretty much since then, it's been a liberal versus conservative bench. And generally speaking, when the cases are contentious, it's drawn on political lines. Not always, and we've talked about the surprises. But generally speaking, when we're talking about something that has a bias, left or right, which everything does, don't fool yourself. Lady Gaga, so non-political. That's what you're going to find. You're going to find some left or right leaning. So what I say is, instead of accusing, and I want to just see this. I know I can't make it happen, and I know I spent time a moment ago talking about loving what is and just accepting it. But what I want to see, and I think I can still say this without having to fight anyone over it, what I want to see is us just to admit that we are all biased. Just admit it. Admit you're biased. Admit that you've got issues. Admit that your issues are that you believe things a certain way and you stand by them, and that's how you're going to be. That's just it. And also, regardless of how many people accuse you of being non-self-aware or self-consumed, you know what? There are people who love you for who you are. Let them love you. And let the ones who don't, who cares? And you love the ones who love you and try to love the ones who don't, and we can't please everybody. Beautiful Aesop's fable, which I think I've shared my G or PG version of here, because my version, I think, would veer into an easy PG-13 just because of the language it's a part of it, but you can't please everybody. The man, the old man, young man, and donkey story. You can't do it. But the first thing we all need to admit is we are biased. Just embrace it, own it, accept it, and then realize that's not a bad thing. Two things everybody's got: biases and agendas, I promise you. And we all speak rhetoric, right? Rhetoric is just the content of what it is that we're saying. And generally agenda-driven. That's where that content is going. And we're presenting an ethos, a pathos, and a logos all the time because that is what rhetoric is. It is not bad. Bias is not bad. Agenda is not bad. It just is. Your left hand is not worse than your right hand. Right? We don't go, left hand. Right hand. Right hand, good. Left hand, bad, right? We're not doing that craziness. Why do we do the same thing? I've literally seen it posted on Facebook that liberalism is a sin. Really? a sin. Liberal. Being a liberal is sinful. Where did that notion come from? You know, I promise you there are liberals who would claim that conservatism is a sin, which is another crazy thing. Right hand good, left hand bad. What are we? Frankenstein? I mean, it's crazy. We got to realize is that it's truly all good. There are varying degrees of truth, absolutely. But how we discern that and how we understand that and how we embrace that and how we don't attack people, which is how we started this conversation, I think, to begin with, was this protest against Betsy DeVos. Who cares? It's done, right? So now let's really think about temptation. And now let's really think about what Satan might be up to, because I think there's really something up there. And maybe there's something to those Screwtape letter posts that make me crazy. I don't know. We'll talk more about what Pope Francis has to say on this in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Culture, current events, our Catholic faith, 50 minutes every afternoon. So Pope Francis was some interesting advice when it comes to understanding what temptation is. Catholic News Service saying don't dialogue with the devil. This is his obvious advice, just to not even let it happen to begin with. And I think a lot of times we kind of get into this stuff, and I'm guilty. I'm guilty. What are you talking about? Where we get on this righteousness kick, and I've been there, believe me, because I want to see justice served. And I will promise you this, I will still stand for human dignity in every and any case. I'm going to do that. I will try to tone down my attitude. I've kind of pledged to myself. That's why you're seeing pictures of clouds and H.R. Puff and stuff. Now, news stories, I'm going to post the news stories. We're going to talk about them here. And I'm not commenting, not trying to ruffle feathers, not trying to get out there and just make things crazy. But I find it interesting what Pope Francis is saying is, he says the devil is astute and you cannot dialogue with him. And he says, we all know what temptations are. We know them because we all have them. Temptations of vanity, pride, covetousness, greed, he said. So the antidote, as Pope Francis suggests, is not to enter in to that type of dialogue where you're entertaining those things, but to admit your weakness. And just simply say, help me. Right? That's a prayer of humility. I've prayed that prayer many, many times. Right? And then I've been guilty of giving into temptation. And being greedy and lustful and covetous, yes. I know those roads well, traveled them, even to the point of righteousness, of justice. We can get vicious. I think I mentioned yesterday what I heard from Dr. Michelle live, the show that we air here at Breadbox Media, with a beautiful reflection on even the good stuff, even that stuff, can be this bizarre sort of lust, gluttony. It could be a gluttony. We just get gluttonous into the stuff of the day to the point that we're drunkards on that. You know, and I know. I know. I can be the world's worst when it comes to that, because I can get so consumed, so absorbed. And I also know that I'm going to ebb and flow. I know I'm going to ebb and flow. Know that. And I know that somewhere in and around that ebbing and flowing, there is a consistency line. There's no doubt. But at the same time, I'm going to ebb and flow, and I know it. But maybe realizing it, recognizing it, and trying to be in some degree of self-control when it says, okay, when we can say, we know this is happening. Know the temptation is coming. Know what's up. Been down this road. And maybe we can know how to respond accordingly where we are not falling prey. That would be the prayer that we all need to pray. First, Lord, help me recognize, right? Help me recognize when I'm going there. First prayer. Second, when I go there, stop what you're doing. Help me. I do not want to end up naked with nothing, which is what Pope Francis says the devil does to you. He's going to leave you naked with nothing. Look at the garden. So another interesting story from Catholic News Service. This is Christians and all people of the Middle East need the solidarity of the U.S. Catholic Church. This is the chairman of three committees of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, head of the Catholic Relief Services Board. The concern for our Christian brethren is inclusive and does not exclude a concern for all peoples of the region who suffer from violence and persecution, both minorities and majorities from both Muslims and Christian countries. This statement, headed by Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, chairman of the Ad Hoc Committee for Religious Liberty, is a statement of solidarity from our U.S. bishops to all suffering in the world. And I think that this is what we're about. We tend, unfortunately, I think, as Catholics, we do it just to kind of, I don't know, it's almost like, well, those guys, they got to, bishops, they got to do that. Kind of got to do that, right? It's kind of what they got to do. Politically, yeah. If they didn't do that, there'd be some questions about their authenticity. Maybe we think that. But here's the thing. They don't have to do anything, first off. They do it because this is what our faith dictates. They make these statements. They make them officially. They make them publicly because it is truly how we're supposed to live this thing. Two components to human dignity are subsidiarity and solidarity. We talked about that bazillion times through the election. What do those mean? Solidarity means global connection with a real concern and ideally a way to help them. And then subsidiarity is what's happening right here in front of us, even in our own home, especially the localist of local. How do we do that? And it's a both and. You don't say, well, one is more important to the other. They are completely integrated from a standpoint of authentic Catholic faith. I was on Catholic News Agency's website, their Facebook page, I should say, and looking at some of the statements after this, and people saying crazy stuff like, yeah, they got to just fix their problems. That's what they got to do. Yeah, okay. Thank you. Wow. Should we have you had this committee for the USCCB? Because what brilliant insight. I wish that would have been the statement. Yeah, Bishop Lori, could you just say, why don't they just fix their problems? Because that would make us all happier. I mean, that's what we need to hear. Statement from the USCCB. Middle Easterns should just fix their own problems. That's what we need. That's a headline. You know, we're the USCCB, thank you very much, and we're going to worry about our own. Who cares about those Middle Easterners? Or anybody else on the globe? Who cares? None in Mali? Am I saying it right? Yes, Mali. Kidnapped. Who cares? They need to fix their own problems over there in Africa. What the heck? What? But that's how we are. We just think that there's something so far removed from us. And I don't, where do we draw that line? Is it outside of our country? Is it really? Because I don't see that we have a lot of concern even for the people down the street at times if they don't agree with us or they don't look like us. So where are we really drawing that line? I've said this and I'll say it. A key, I'm not going to say it's the key, I'm going to say it's a key, and it may be the key, but it's undoubtedly a key, but I think there's bigger stuff. In the grand scheme, it's all, there's way more, there's just more. But one of the keys is if we were to truly live this as people of faith, this concept of subsidiarity and solidarity, we would do what Pope Francis said, and of course it got all kinds of like, oh my goodness, what's he saying? Atheists are just as good as Catholics. What kind of universalist is he, right? That's the reaction he got. He just said, hey, you know what? We'll meet you doing good. Because anybody can embrace that. Well, anybody should be able to embrace it. Politically, we get to the point where we can't because we're like, no, they just need to do their right hand bad, left hand good, whatever, right? We're back to that. No, they don't just need to fix themselves. We need to find ways to help that. What does that look like? That might be a refugee program that says we're going to bring these individuals in and give them every possible resource to go back. That would be great. Do we have a problem with that? Who's got a problem with that? Because like I say, the limited experience I've had with refugees, they want to go home. They want to go fix things. They just can't. Because the political climate, the economic climate, there's just stuff that's so completely wrong that they can't. Well, what if we did? What if we equipped them? What if that was our program? Would that look better? Let's do it. Let's do it. If we can all agree on that, then by golly, let's do it. But my fear is that we just have a weird way we draw the line. It's not necessarily over there. It's just someone, for whatever reason, you can't embrace. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.